All right, guys. So welcome to week four of your Effortless Discipline Masterclass. Over the last 3, 4 weeks, we've gone through, redefining discipline, talking about how to simplify lives, how to focus on clear goals, which make all the difference, goals that affect us, that are interesting to us, that are meaningful to us, and not goals that other people choose for us or society. Today we're going to just wrap it up with a couple of key ideas. Some of them will be a little bit familiar to you, others may not be. But I think we're going to finish on a nice high here. But before we get going, I do want to give you guys an opportunity right up front to check in with me on any questions, any takeaways. I'm assuming that you guys have been. You would have been on the class last week, maybe some of you, but obviously there's been three classes so far. And I'm just interested to hear any feedback that you guys may have with regards the last three presentations, the last three trainings, and if you guys have seen any results, if you've implemented anything. So I can't see you all at the moment. So please, if you want to share, just shout out and go ahead and share. Any takeaways, wins, challenges, questions?
For me, Arthur, I don't know if you can see me or not, but was the big one for me was think week one was about making rules rather than like setting disciplines and stuff. So I've just made some simple rules about I don't eat bread, I exercise every day, and they're kind of rules rather than me trying to get into stuff. And it's working a treat so far. Whenever it comes to doing it, I just say, no, that's my rule is not to eat bread. My rule is this, and it's really spurring me on to keep going.
Wow, awesome, awesome, Michael. Having rules that are, being clear about it, because I think defining those rules initially is key, obviously. But once you have them, they can be really powerful, as you say. I use the example of about the person that decided that they don't eat meat. If you recall, I think I'm not sure if that was in the first or the second presentation. That was just a rule. I don't eat meat, whereas the other person's just trying to eat clean, the one is absolute, the other one is, not. And when you have black and white rules, it just really makes life a lot easier. One, to filter out the possibilities, and two, to follow through. So great stuff, Michael. Great stuff.
It for me because I used to say like a bit 80% gluten free, and it's like, what the fuck does that even mean? And I want it to be a certain body shape. But once I said I don't eat bread and every day, them goals are much more achievable.
And that's another good point there, because sometimes we do say, I want to be 90% this or 80% that, and that just leaves too much wiggle room. Whereas if you say 100%, I'm not doing this or I'm doing that, then that's it. It's absolute and makes it a lot easier than saying, oh, okay, I'm going to be clean 80% of the time or 85% of the time. It's more likely that you would follow through. So, a couple of good points there. What else, guys? Anything else? I think I saw Jared come in. Welcome, Jared. I don't see you on my panel at the moment, so I'm not sure if you're connected, but welcome.
I'm here. I'm a little late. Sorry, I was dealing with a mess,
No
but I
worries,
got it all
brother.
sort of figured out.
Well, welcome. Welcome. Glad we got to sort it out. Benjamin says the rule of not eating meat changed me. My body does not need meat. So I prescribed that. That's the first week, and it's an absolute that my body's reflecting this. Okay, great. Whatever works for you, Benjamin. And that's the key thing. It's got to work for you. Ian.
Yeah, I've got a sort of a question for the group on dealing with digital detox. So I'm not really much of a digital addict, so that wasn't, trying to say I'm going to go for long periods without my phone. It's relatively simple,
Oh, that's an interview.
but I've got children who've grown up with technology, probably encouraged a little bit by us when they were little. It was a bit too easy to just give them a phone or an iPad to keep them quiet when need be. And trying to get them to detox is is challenging, and I would really like to do it because I think I'll get a huge amount out of it. And in fact, it's the I've got concerns about how wedded they are to technology. So I don't know if anyone's got any success stories that they can share with digital detox and children, particularly teenagers, and things that might have worked, because I'm struggling there to try and make that land.
That's a great question, Ian, and something we definitely need to consider. Can I though ask that we, because that might lead us down and a rabbit hole of sorts. Can we leave that question until the end, where we're going to be and sure. Answer that, if that's okay? Yeah. But
yeah,
it's a great question, because that's exactly the problem I have with at least my daughter. Less so my son, but he's all of his computer games, and that's his addiction. But my daughter, is all over her phone, and that's a real concern. So definitely we'll have a chat about that at the end. Okay. Anybody else for anything else?
I did like that advice last week, though, just to kind of put things on silent. So I just did it all morning till noon. And I would say I am a lot more efficient, not hearing buzzes or things like that on the phone.
Yeah, that is so important. And I've done that for quite a while now. And it's amazing when others come into my area and haven't done it, how it just like, oh my God, it aggravates me. But also, you just don't need it. You really don't need it. The science tells us that, on average, when we haven't taken various steps like these, on average, we interrupt it every 3 minutes. Yeah. And then it takes about 12 minutes for us to refocus on the task at hand, if we ever focus on the same task. Because usually what can also happen is we get distracted so much, we pick up something else because we think we can multitask and we've got so many things to do. So not only does it distract you in the moment, it also takes you off task usually as well. And so that's an interesting thing to bear in mind when you look at your environment and you're thinking, okay, what is taking me away from actually being deeply focused on the task at hand? Good. All right. Anybody else before we kick off?
Yeah, Arthur, I've been working on not looking at my phone in the morning, but what I've found is it's hard to put an incremental step on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As far as like a timer. So I don't know if you have a recommendation there to maybe use, I guess I could use my watch as a timer. But what I've just been trying to do is challenging myself to see how long I can go before I pick the sucker up in the morning. But that's not really a black and white boundary or goal either. So I don't know if you got any suggestions there.
I think it's the easiest, because in order to time it, we'd either have to look at our watches or whatever, or actually put an alarm on the phone. You don't want to use your phone as for the same task, because you don't want to have it around. What I would say is just leave your phone away. Put your phone away, in another room or in a drawer. And then, you just go work for, actually what you could do is get one of those little timers. You get those Pomodoro timers and, you can put 20 minutes or you get other timers. And it's a little like stopwatch thing. You can buy quite cheaply on Amazon. And so you can have that and just put in like 50 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever. And then when that buzzes, then your time, yeah?
Yeah, that sounds good. I'll give it a try.
All righty. Let's see. Dot is zero notifications turned on. Nothing with sign of all minus vibration. My light, even on a screen and pop-up notification, all disabled. Say if it's that important, they should call 911. You can also set a timer on your microwave. Okay, there you go. Or neck timer. Exactly. Thanks, Donnie. All right, guys. So let's bring this home and let's start on today's training. So now let's talk a little bit about procrastination, because quite a few guys often talk about this, and procrastination is the number one killer of our perfect life, because usually it can begin first thing in the morning. And especially if you're the type of person that's going to hit the snooze button, if you are, then you're starting on the wrong foot straight away. And you really send the wrong signal to yourself when you hit that snooze button, because you're pretty much saying, well, my dreams can wait. Now, I suspect that most of you will probably have dialed in your morning routine. But if you haven't, this is going to be your first critical step. How you start the day is clear. You know, it's one of our main teachings. It's really key, because if you can't control your day from the beginning, if you can't show up and win that first battle of getting out of bed at the right, then you know, it's really difficult to start implementing anything else. So the other thing I want to say, just talking about wake up time, you know, what time you wake up is possibly less of importance than how you wake up and what you do in the first hours of the day when you are the most creative. Waking up the same time of the day is important, because then you actually support your biology in supporting you. Because if you have irregular wake-up times, then that's going to knock you off kilter. But what time you wake up, well, that's up to you, really. You know, there's a lot of people out there saying, oh, you should join the 5 a.m. club, or, you know, the 3:45 club, all of that. And yeah, there's some good sense in doing that if you need a couple extra hours in the morning. But if you're not rushed in the morning, it may not make sense for you to do that, right? If you need those extra hours, then yeah, by all means, because it can be really useful to wake up at 5, do 2 hours of deep work, and then you begin your alpha rise and shine. But the point here is you really want to make the goal yours and build it around your lifestyle, instead of thinking, oh, I should just do it because everyone else is doing it. So you have to choose the goals that are right for you and right for your lifestyle. And I said this in the first training, and I'm going to repeat it again because it's really important. You know, the other major point that I want to make on this is connecting the dots. And when I mean connecting the dots is, it's not just about the time you wake up. That is really connected to the time that you go to sleep. The two are one thing in essence, because if you are all over the place going to sleep, that's going to affect how you feel when you wake up in the morning, even if you're waking up consistently at the same time. And so to the degree that you can connect these discipline habits will be to the degree that you actually see a lot of progress, because the one could be affecting the other. And so never see the going to sleep time as something separate and how you go to sleep. You know, obviously you want to, you know, there's a way to wind down before you go to sleep. All of that links to how you sleep, how you wake up. And so always bear that in mind. These things are connected. And so maybe one thing you want to do, if you've dialed in your morning routine, but you haven't dialed in your evening routine, you can set yourself a reverse alarm. What is a reverse alarm? It's an alarm that tells you to get ready for bed. So if you want to be, you know, in bed by 10, right, you might want to set your reverse alarm for 8 o'clock. Then you know you've got 2 hours to wind down, whatever that means for you. Now, what time you're in bed and what time you go to sleep is two different things as well. You know, you don't count sleep time from the time you're in bed. You obviously count sleep time from the time you're asleep. So if you're in bed from 10 and you only go to sleep 11, obviously you only count from 11 for the number of hours you sleep. And just as a reminder, we're aiming for about 7.5 hours of sleep. And any sleep before 12 is usually better sleep than any sleep after 12. So the three discipline habits here that are going to help you deal with procrastination is, one, how you go to sleep, how you wake up, and what you do in that first hour or two after waking up, because that is your most creative time. So if you can connect going to sleep at, say, 10, waking up 7.5 hours later, you know, doing an hour of focusing on your most important task or on your most creative piece, if you dial just those three discipline habits in, that's gonna put you in the 1%. It's gonna give you such an edge, because by the time 9 o'clock comes, you've already done an amazing creative piece for 1 hour. You've probably even been able to work out, done your alpha rise and shine, and you've achieved a lot before most people have woken up. So those are three discipline habits that are quite useful to beat procrastination and get really, really productive, as well as waking up with the right kind of energy, which is key. Because once again, if we don't get the fundamentals right, anything else further down the line is going to be impacted by that. Now, let me talk a little bit. Now, I don't know. I did a pack call the last week, Friday. And so for any of you that watched that, you're going to get a bit of a repeat here on two of the slides at least. When it comes to procrastination, the motivation to do something, actually, there's someone actually came up with an equation, which you see on the screen before you. The guy's name was Pierce Steele. And this guy won the equivalent of the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize in psychology for taking all the research papers on, motivation and coming up with a meta-analysis on this. So he knows what he's talking about. And if you look at this equation, what we want to do is we want to maximize the numerator and minimize the denominator. And so there's four areas on this this equation that feeds into, let's call it, our motivation score. How motivated are we for a goal to perform, to show up and do the work required to achieve the goal? So as you can see, motivation equals expectancy time, value over impulsivity times delay. And what we want is we want high expectancy and high value. So let's talk a little bit about the value, because the first thing we want to do is figure out if we value the goal that we've chosen. And when you think about the project that you've chosen, the goal that you've chosen, you have to ask yourself, am I really excited about this goal? Do I really value the goal? Is this really something that's going to fire me up? As we say, scary and exciting. Is it exciting for you? Because if it isn't, then your motivation is going to be really low to show up for it. And that leads to procrastination. Then we also get to check if we have high expectancy. And that is really all about your confidence levels. Are you confident in your ability to achieve this goal? Because if your confidence is low, your anxiety is going to be up, and we are not going to show up for that. That's going to have a low score. We're going to get stressed out, and we're going to procrastinate. So you've got to have a reasonable confidence that you can achieve this exciting goal that you're going to value. Those two things are really key. What we want to minimize is the impulsivity, right? And the distance that we feel that we are away from actually achieving the goal. Now we're talking about the denominator here. If we don't create the space to work on our goals, and we are more inclined to deviate and be impulsive about other things, then obviously that's going to affect our motivation, as well as seeing a goal date too far away. The further away the perceived target date is of that goal, the less we're going to be motivated. And so we want to make sure that we bring that delay down. We want to make sure that we, instead of being impulsive in the moment about doing something that doesn't help us with reaching our goal, we plan in specific deep dive and focus time to work on our goal. So this equation is something fun to play with on a goal. You can rate the four values and see how does this goal show up for me. You can also take this and retrospectively look at goals you've set for the past and see how did that goal, you know, how did that rate, the motivation level rate for, and see if that actually has some connection to the results of the goal that you have. Now,
Arthur, sorry, just want to understand that. I didn't get the definition right. Delay is how far away we are from the goal. How did you define impulsiveness then?
So impulsiveness is your ability, well, the opposite is your ability to focus on working on that goal, right? As opposed to allowing yourself to be distracted to do other things. So impulsivity is really you being impulsive in the moment about doing anything but working on that goal. Yeah. It is the opposite of structuring specific, deep, focused work time to concentrate on progressing that goal. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Great. So what we want to do is when we're setting goals, we want to create great goals. And we definitely want to have goals because we are theological beings, which means we work better when we have goals. All right. So there's reason to have goals other than achieving more. We work better with goals. It's more exciting and fun for us to have goals. And there are four ways that we can make sure that our goals are great goals, if you want to do that. Number one, they have to challenge us, but at the same time, they can't be so much of a challenge that we don't believe we can achieve them. In other words, we've got to have the belief that they are feasible and that we can achieve them. And as I said before, they also have to be meaningful goals. They've got to be true goals for us. The other thing is we want to get really specific. We need to know what, by when, and we need to know the exact steps that we're going to take or as close to. Because if we don't have that, there are so many gaps in that understanding of that goal that that's going to present a problem for us. Talking about the delay, right? We want to minimize the delay in actually starting to see results. So instead of saying, I'm going to run a marathon, we'll create like mini goals all along the way so that we can feel us achieving a target and having those wins along the way that's going to build the momentum. So having mini goals for the overall, I want to run a marathon in 1 year. And so I'm going to maybe set like a goal, a monthly goal, so I can hit that and know, tick, I'm working, I'm progressing, as well as having like 24-hour goals when you first make a decision to pursue that goal, having 48-hour goals, having a weekly goal, just to build that momentum and have an immediate target. That helps us decrease that delay. And then lastly, we want routines or disciplined habits, because what we want to focus on is the process by which we're going to achieve the goal of running the marathon. Instead of just saying, I'm going to run the marathon and then go out and running, we want to focus on the routines. What do I need to do on a daily basis such that I'll be ready to run the marathon? Your discipline habit may be, I'm going to wake up clock and I'm going to run for 30 minutes each morning. That's the process. That's the routine. That's the habit. And you know that if you do that, guaranteed that you're going to be ready to run that marathon. So we want to ensure that we've got all of the when we are creating a goal. So this is a little bit of background, because obviously having great goals that we believe in that excite us is going to help us actually show up to do the work required to achieve that goal. And that's also going to obviously move forward and prevent us from getting caught up in procrastination. Peter says, I know Tim hates this acronym, but is this where SMART goals come in? Specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, timely. It is. The only thing that I have that I want to make a distinction with this, though, is I have a real problem with realistic. Yeah. Because when certain people read realistic, they make the goal too small. Yeah. And I see a difference between realistic and feasible. You got to believe you can do it, right? But it's got to be a stretch. Whereas if we think reasonably, well, you know, Elon Musk wasn't thinking reasonably when he said he's going to like, you know, set up a rocket that's going to come back in one piece. Yeah. And so, yes, Peter, I think, you know, specific, obviously that we mentioned that. Measurable, obviously, you know, did I achieve it or not? Of course. Achievable, yeah, feasible, realistic. Question, you know, in inverted commas, untimely. Well, yes, we need to know. That's where I say about having the mini goals. We know by when we want it, but then also taking the time a step further and actually reducing the mini target dates. So we decrease the delay, which then feeds into the motivation score. Make sense, Peter? All right, awesome. Now, let's talk a little bit about accountability. Accountability is one of the secrets of success, and we definitely want to be using the strategy to succeed. And of course, you guys have accountability here in TPM if you're using it. Because I know a couple of guys don't like accountability. They don't show up for their accountability. And I think personally, that's crazy, because this is such a huge part of achieving your goals, is showing up to be seen. Now, we can lie to ourselves. We do a pretty good job, but we're not going to lie to other people that we care about. Yeah. And we'll do more for others than we'll do for ourselves. And that's where accountability comes in. And that's why it's such a key success factor. We will do so much more not to disappoint others than we'll do for ourselves. So we definitely want to use the strategy. But now we can take accountability to a whole new level. And what I mean by that is using it as public accountability. Now, within TPM, you know, you've got your group. And at times, you might get really comfortable with your group. But what about if you actually went up to your friend zone, you know, to Facebook, to any groups that you're involved in out there that are not related to TPM, and you told them that I'm going to achieve this goal by then? That's going to put a whole different sense of accountability onto you. And when you have those outside eyes in, as we say, that social peer pressure, you can achieve a lot more. And that's another useful twist to accountability that you may not be employing, but if you did, you may definitely show up in a way that you haven't before. You know, whether it's on Facebook, as I said, or your business circles, it's really getting naked, if you want to call it that, and puts you out there so you can deliver your best and not let people down. You know, it's going to commit you. It's going to force you to commit to a goal on a whole new level, and you're going to be a lot more motivated to achieve it. The other thing, proximity is power. Being surrounded by like-minded individuals is key to ensuring your environment, as is ensuring your environment and the people in it, and making sure that they are supporting you and not weakening you. All right. All of you guys know most of this because we've discussed it, but enlarging that accountability circle may be the thing for you to take it to the next level. Proximity is power. And as you know, you become the sum total of the people you spend the most time with. So how can you ramp up your accountability? Where can you get naked and put yourself out there in a sense where others outside of TPM may hold you accountable or you feel accountable to them? Now we get on to a really interesting concept that just goes across everything that we're talking about here. And what we want to talk about here is how to program your infinite potential. We're going to discuss algorithms, and I'm going to explain why you should really care about this. The algorithm, according to Harari, he's the guy that wrote, he's the author that wrote the book Homo Deus, okay, and which is a brief history of the future. He talks about where we're heading and how algorithms are driving us there. And he said that if we want to understand our life and our future, we should make every effort to understand what an algorithm is and how they are driving our lives. Now, Ray Dalio, who is the author of the best-selling book, Principle, he's also one of the top 100 wealthiest people in the world. He's also one of the most successful individual influential people on the planet. And this is children, your peers learn to speak the language of algorithms because it is as important as supporting any other language. So we want to get fluent in algorithms. Algorithms, algorithms, algorithms. So what is an algorithm? An algorithm is basically a methodical set of steps that can be used to make calculations, to resolve problems, to reach decisions. Two simple examples. If you average two numbers, you know, if you want to average two numbers, you add them together, you divide by two. That's a simple algorithm. Another simple algorithm might be if you want to make soup, you know, step one might be get the water boiling. Step two, cut up the vegetables. Step three, chuck the vegetables in, etc. That's an algorithm, a recipe. Now, if you want to have a great life, right, all you have to do is step back and see what are the algorithms that I need to be following in order to do that. Another way to look at this is considering your life as a system built up of many programs, many algorithms. And so we want to check out the system that we have for our life and consider what system do we need to put in place that you can repeat over and over to give you the best result. What we want to do is notice what works and obviously do more of that, and also notice what doesn't work and do less of that. And then at the same time, have fun creating the system. Think about what robots do. They repeat certain instructions that have been programmed by the programmer such that they have a very high levels of intelligence without consciousness currently and can do things better than a human being. We call this artificial intelligence. These robots and artificial intelligence work on the principle of if this, then that. If this happens, then do that. And if that happens, then do this. Now, what we're talking about here, you know, we're talking about becoming more disciplined so that we can do the things we know we have to do in order to create the life that we desire. And in order to do that, we use a little bit of willpower initially. However, we don't want to rely on willpower because we know that is expendable. And so instead of this, we want to leverage our own AI, our ancient intelligence, which goes back 500 million years. And if we program it with algorithms for life, which then become habits, and we run our life in the same way as computers do. So we want to create our own system based on a number of algorithms that we know work for us. Algorithms on how we sleep, how we eat, how we move, how we love, such that when we run these algorithms, we know and we expect the result that we desire time in and time again. So right now, you guys are running a bunch of algorithms. You've always been running them, you know, your own system, and you're getting certain results, some good, some not so good. The question we get to ask are all of these results that you're getting, the algorithms that you're implementing, as effective as they can be in order for you to show up as the best version of yourself. So here's a powerful exercise that I'm going to invite you guys to do. And that is to go to really shed some light on the programs that you're running right now. Just like a computer analyst going through and checking out all the programs that some software might be running. What I want you to do with this is to understand that your life is essentially one big collection of algorithms, and some of them are great and some of them need a little bit of work. So here's what you get to do. You get to choose 1 hour, because this task will take as long as you give it. But we don't want to spend more than 1 hour, one focused and dedicated hour, to jumpstart the process of you shining that spotlight on your life and your algorithms. Now, you make a list of 100 algorithms. It's going to take your time. You're going to get frustrated. You get to push through. For a full hour, you do as many as you can about all areas of your life. For example, you know, an algorithm could be something like, if I'm eating, then I'm not eating sugar, carbs, or processed, whatever the rules are you have around that. It could be what time you wake up. It could be what time you go to sleep. It could be how you deal with the electronics. All of these are algorithms that you're currently running. So you get to write them all down. As many as you can, aim for 100, one focused and dedicated hour. Do yourselves this service. Really do this, because this will reveal to you so much about how you are showing up on every day and things that you might not think about because they've just become automatic. So you want to go through your whole day, your whole life, write down all the program algorithms that you can think about, how you do what you do and what algorithms are running. And you might notice, as we said, some really good ones, but that you might not be doing them all of the time. And so what you want to do is program those so you don't waste energy during the time, during the day or something else. You also may notice that a few need some work and need to be upgraded. Ian, I saw your hand go up. You got a question?
Yeah, it's just a quick question. I like the sound of this. But one immediate thought, is there value in trying to bucket these algorithms into the five territories?
There is. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Not so much of the five territories, but you certainly can. Yeah. I mean, whatever's going to help you think about areas, because when you first start this, if you don't have any structure, it might be difficult to start thinking about it. But once you chunk it down into five territories or something else, that might help you spot them. So yeah, by all means, that's a great idea. Step two of this is I want you to look through your list of 100 and select the 10 most powerful algorithms that have been the most life-changing for you or could be life-changing for you if you did them consistently. Now, you guys may have all heard of Scott Adams. He's the guy that created Dilbert, right? And he wrote a book, How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. In that book, you know, he describes us as moist robots. Moist robots. And he says what you need to do is get good at programming and getting good at that interface that the human body is using for the algorithms, okay? So now we've got three very influential guys saying the same thing. So we really want to take notice of this. He says the first three algorithms that you should work on is eating, moving, and sleeping. Because if you can't get your energy right, you're gonna have a really hard time living your best self and living with happiness. This is the fundamentals. So you get to work on those three. So there you go, Ian. That's three other areas, yeah? So you're going to have your algorithms. I'm going to have mine. A few of mine are like, you know, for eating, you know, I work on no sugar, no flour, no vegetable oils. You know, that's my algorithm. I walk 1 hour every day on the beach. You know, you could have for how you breathe, how you focus, how you love, how you meditate, you know, how you deal with technology, etc. Look at all of these areas. A couple of examples, working out for a minimum of 25 minutes each day. That could be your algorithm because that should be your minimum, 25 minutes of activity every day. What time you shut down, you know, at the end of the day, your digital sunset, you know, what time you spend with your family. How do you spend time with your family? Breathing through your nose instead of through your mouth. Really key. Science is showing us that we get to breathe through our nose and not through our mouth, you know, and breathing deeply. You know, do you make conscious effort of breathing deeply into your stomach? And so you want to have a look at all these areas, you know, how do you handle technology, your email, you know, your thoughts and behaviors around, you know, wisdom. How do you show up? You know, some people use the whole Stoic philosophy. So you get to have a look at it and come up with your 10 most powerful algorithms. Okay. Make sense? So you've done your 100. From there, you find your 10 greatest ones. So we've spoken a lot about keystone habits. And if you recall, a keystone habit is something that you do that is like a keystone in the arch. It keeps the arch up. It locks everything into place. So when you work on one aspect of self-mastery or self-discipline, you improve in all other areas of your life. So if, for example, you're working on not cursing or swearing, right? Then other aspects of your willpower are going to improve. You improve one area of your life, it's going to show benefits in others. So you want to identify your keystone habits and the associated algorithms. What are your keystone habits for the big three? Your work, your energy, and your relationships. What are they? So those are the big three. You could do the five territories. Those would be the other big five, right? Obviously, there's overlap with the relationships there. So you want to identify your keystone habits in all of these areas. For example, for energy, your keystone habit might be going for a walk on the beach, as I do, as I've mentioned often. You know, but also see what you would do, what you typically do instead of that keystone habit. What is your kryptonite that you might tend to default to if you don't show up for that keystone habit? All right. For mine, you know, if my keystone habit is walking on the beach, kryptonite could be I sleep late and then I don't have time. Yeah, that would be my kryptonite habit. You know, you want to look at your work. You know, what is your keystone habit for work? And, you know, that might be doing an hour of deep work first thing in the morning, right? A negative alternative might be, you know, first thing you do is you jump on email when you wake up or check your phone. For relationships or love, you know, a keystone habit might be blocking family time with the kids after 7. And the kryptonite may be, well, I get really impatient with my kids instead of slowing down and connecting with them. So figure out, and then before, yeah, the last one there, you want to also consider the big T, technology. Someone's noisy. Okay. There we go. For technology, the big T, what are your algorithms for technology? Do you check social media? Do you follow digital news? Do you have notifications on? Do you check your phone and email first thing in the morning? All of these would be kryptonite habits. So figure out what are your keystone habits? What would you want them to be if you don't have them in place? What is a typical kryptonite you default to? And what can you do about that to minimize that? So then the final section I want to cover is writing algorithms. The rule number one is you got to know what you want. If you want a machine to perform a task, you know, at a very high level, you need to know what doing the task at a very high level looks like. You have to define your goal. You've got to have a clear target. Tesla, like any other autonomous car, its goal is to get you to the destination safely. And so it's running a bunch of algorithms to ensure it does that, you know, like don't cross the lanes unless something happens, you know, or if you approach an obstacle, then do something. Now, all of these are simple algorithms that work and contributed towards the overall clear target. So you need to know what your target is and what you want to achieve in your life so that you can then create the appropriate algorithm and create the habit that's going to get you there. The second thing that you'd get to do is imagine that there is a programmer. Now, this could be your best self in the future. This could be, you know, Jesus or Buddha or any other influential person that you have in high self, that you hold in high self-esteem. And the question you would ask is, how would they respond to the various algorithms? What would they do? What would be the best version of you? And use that as a standard for your target outcome. So you want to get clear what it is you want to create. You also want to use this technique of putting something, you know, you, your best self, or someone you have high regard for, what would they do in that situation, and use that as your outcome. Two simple techniques that can help you figure out what is that end result. Now, over the last 4 weeks, we've spoken a lot about various bits and pieces, and I've given you a bunch of exercises. And I think that this whole subject is really powerful. If we implement, as with any new ideas, you know, without implementing it, it's worthless. But, you know, one of the things we want to really focus on is just looking at 1% improvement on a daily basis and employing the whole, that concept of can I, constant and never ending improvement. At the same time, we don't want to get so anal about it, so black and white, so like, oh, it's got to be like this or like this or like that. Make it a game. Have some fun. Build it up incrementally. If you suddenly go out and you change everything and you put in your rules and you put in your algorithms and all that, it could be too much. It could be too soon. What you want to do is go back on Masterclass 1 and 2 and see how can I incrementally increase my habits, my discipline habits, such that the one helps the other and that I've built my masterpiece day. Because all of this really leads to you building a masterful day, a masterpiece of a day, your ideal day, and then doing it again and again and again, consistent, but without making huge leaps and bounds that you overwhelm yourself and that you just then blow yourself out of the water. So make it a game, have fun, right? The only person you're in competition with is yourself. Measure, track, improve. And if you implement half of what we've spoken about, you guys are going to be really, really productive and discipline is going to become an effortless thing for you. Yeah. So that's all I've got for you guys. Questions and yeah, any feedback? No questions, no feedback.
No, feedback is it's powerful stuff. So as we're going through, I'm already starting to think about things that I can do. So putting it down as an algorithm is powerful for me. Mm-hmm. That suddenly gets things to click in to place around, okay, how do I change that habit? So one of my things I've been trying to work on myself on is getting down to stuff early when I get to my desk in the morning. And now I can see now if I write rules or in other words, turn that into an algorithm, say this is what I do when I get to my desk, that'll stop me going, oh, I wonder what's going on in the world and looking at a news website, which yeah. is something I can do that distracts me and stops me getting down to things in the morning.
Exactly. Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. You're welcome, guys. Yeah, Benjamin, thank you. That's what it is. That's what it is. You know, a lot of these concepts we've spoken about in different ways, but once you look at it as you're a computer system and you're running algorithms, it just, for me, it you know, being a logical, really logical person, it just actually makes it a lot easier to not just notice how you're showing up. Ah, that's my algorithm for that. You know, my son walks in while I'm on a call. My algorithm is to like do X, you know, okay, I don't want that. What am I going to do? You know? And so I think writing up those 100 algorithms is going to be really powerful to figure out things that you are reacting to subconsciously, automatically now that you know you may not be aware of as much. And I think if you really focus on energy, work, love, and the big T technology, in all of those, you're going to come up with a ton of algorithms that you can shift and change for the better.
Yeah, so I'm going to have fun playing with that, trying things and see what works.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a risk of being so binary? You know, us men like to be black and white, and our women, they're not even gray. They're you know, purple. I mean, is there truly like a danger, if you will, of making things so black and white?
I think, you know, anything to the extreme can be, you know, less than ideal. But I think, you know, all of these, what I don't want us to think, what I'm not saying is we want to become robots. Yeah, that's not right. What I'm saying. But we do want to use the robotic frame to improve how we show up and to be productive. And so when I say like, okay, you can have an algorithm for digital sunset, that's where my technology goes off, so then I can spend the next hour with my family, right? That's the structure. And this is all about is how do I structure it such that I can and do the things I want to do. Within that hour that you're with family, right, you may have other algorithms or you may do nothing in that except enjoy that hour with your family. Yeah? And so, you know, collect berries. That's an algorithm. Yeah. Sure. And so no one's become a cold and get cold. No one's attached from emotional low. But what I'm saying is the masculine thrives on structure. We need structure. And so this is a great way to structure your day, structure your life such that it produces the best version of yourself, which is what everybody wants. Yeah. So I think when you take it from that perspective, I don't think there's a danger. I think there's only real advantages.
So how, I mean, maybe it's a shit test, but like, how do you react when your algorithm, your commitment, if you will, to yourself is challenged by either a change of plans, your wife's desires? Like I have this new thing. I'm like, I'm up at 5:55. I don't know why I picked that number. It's just cool. And my wife's like, yeah, I like what you're doing. You're getting up early. You're getting shit done, blah, blah, blah. But it'd be nice if you would stay and cuddle or whatever. Right. I'm like, okay, cool. But like, I have this commitment to myself. So.
Okay. Great question. So what you get to do potentially is say, okay, I need to do this. You want this. So for 3 days, my ritual is that I'm going to follow my program. And then for Thursday and Friday, I'm going to cuddle. Yeah. And so you get to work out something because, yeah, we don't live in isolation. You know, we live with others. And so we get to take that into account and say, okay, how can I build a system such that we both win? Yeah. And so maybe it's setting it up like that way. And you have complete flexibility here. You build it the way you want to. Yeah. And that's a great question as well, because some guys want to go sleep early so they can wake up early, whereas their partner may want to go sleep late because they sleep late. They don't have to get up early. So then, and then you have a mismatch. Once again, something like, okay, for like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, I'm going to wake up early. Tuesdays, Thursdays is movie nights with you. You know, okay, it's going to screw up a little bit with your wake up time, but you get to work out something that works for the both of you. Yeah. In other words, don't be so black and white that you don't allow flexibility into that schedule. But for the most part, you want to be following your plan.
Makes sense.
Michael.
I think I've got it, but a lot of the times when you've mentioned algorithms and give examples, they just sound like rules. So what's the difference between algorithms and rules? Is it a list of...
In its most simple form, it's the same thing, you know. Computer runs a rules, you know, if this, then that. And so that's an algorithm. Your rule can be an algorithm, yeah? I don't eat meat or, you know, I don't eat drink or whatever. It's just another way of looking at a different perspective, yeah? But it's really getting clear on, well, I'll tell you what it isn't. A rule won't tell you how you're showing up with your kids, but an algorithm will. Yeah. An algorithm has probably got more content in there for you to work with than just a blanket rule. Yeah. So you could have a rule that says, I don't eat meat. That can be an algorithm. But if you are reacting when your son walks in or your daughter walks in at a certain time and you're impatient, well, that's your algorithm running there. It's not a rule running. So there's a difference as I speak about it. Yeah. Although there can be an overlap and it can be the same thing if it's a rule sometimes. I'm not sure if I explained that right. Yeah, you get the difference.
Algorithms are steps or things that you do, and it can either be a one, which is a rule, I don't eat meat.
Yeah.
Or it's four or five. When I go to work, I turn the computer on and I do my emails first thing. That's a three-step algorithm as opposed to a one-step algorithm.
Yeah.
It's a set of rules, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. Just going to check the messages. Jeff says, does this class continue next week? I see a huge opportunity to share some of our top algorithms. It doesn't, unfortunately. I'll just have a think. We'll be talking about how we can do this. And maybe we start a workbook chat, although those usually die a sad death. So I don't want to just create another work group. But if you guys have got any ideas how you would like to see us move this forward, I'm open. I'm all ears. Aaron, listing out algorithms is a great exercise to identify all of the stories in our head that don't benefit us. Exactly. If you do your 100 algorithms, yeah? What else, guys? After the series, I expect you guys to be like productivity ninjas, yeah? Dialed in your like 5-6 keystone habits, your key discipline habits. I expect productivity to be going through the roof. I expect your success in all areas just to be out of this world. And if it's not, well.
Fired.
Then you're fired.
Right. Okay, last question, since no one else is asking any. Bedtime routine. I know you're a sleep junkie, and I don't think I have sleeping problems, but we have this terrible habit. Amber stays up late. I fall asleep on the couch. My question is this. Do you think getting 3 hours sleep on the couch, waking up, stumbling to bed, and falling back to sleep there is that detrimental in the big picture of things, as long as you're getting enough sleep, like broken sleep, if you will?
I think if you're getting enough sleep, like 7.5 hours, I mean, it's all relative, you know. I think if you're just waking up, walking to your bed and falling asleep, and you're getting your 7.5 hours sleep, and you're getting some decent sleep on the couch, you know, it's not like, you know, you're not just napping. No. Then I think, you know, for the most part, it's not too bad. Yeah. Obviously it'd be better if you just slept in the one place, because then you wouldn't wake up. But if that wake up period is a short period of time and you fall asleep straight away, then I'm not sure that, you know, the downside is that major.
Fair enough.
I think, Jared, I do this daily, and it's something I'm starting to break. And so, but what I think is important there is the amount of deep sleep you're getting.
Yeah.
So, like, I think if you got, because like I was checking my tracker, and in the fall I was only getting like 6 hours of deep sleep, but there were some nights where I was getting three. I was getting 6 hours of sleep. I was getting like 3 hours of deep sleep.
Oh yeah.
And like I could get 8 hours now and only get an hour of deep sleep. Right. So I think the deep sleep is what, and I had a lot more energy back then.
But careful as well, Gabe. We need deep sleep, but not all of our sleep necessarily needs to be deep. Yeah.
Right.
There are ratios, and we go in and out with deep sleep and then REM sleep, and we should. We should be doing this. So if you're thinking that I need to like maximize 5 hours in deep, that's not what we're looking for. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe REM cycles too.
Yeah. There's ratios. We get like so much deep sleep, so much REM sleep. And it's not like, you know, it's like 3 hours or whatever. I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. But, you know, your overall sleep quality is made up of various sleep levels. And so we need all of them. Yeah. What else, guys? Anything else?
So, if we go back to children and digital detox, or teenagers.
Of course, yes. Yeah, great. Thank you. Thanks again. And I'm happy to go to the brothers here as well. I'm just going to share some of my thoughts. And I think I've shared this before. When my kids are on electronics, they tend to be more irritable with each other. It's an interesting thing to notice. When they off electronics, like say I've like punished them or something, and they're both off electronics for like a week, they are so more cooperative. They are so much more willing to play with each other. There's a lot more fights. So you know, technology, an abuse of technology, as what we're talking about, really affects how kids show up. Yeah. And so I think we get to limit their time for sure. Yeah. By explaining to them the damage that's being done as much as we can, as much as they're willing to listen, which is not always easy, because what do? They get addicted, right? They get addicted to the social media and because it's all like automatic. And that's why these social media programmers spend millions using psychologists and all of that to figure out how to get us addicted, you know. And you guys have a problem. How about a kid that hasn't got any, you know, willpower or discipline, or hasn't developed any, you know, discipline or whatever, you know, they just get sucked in. The thing I've seen with my daughter is she's really creative. And if I just let her be on her phone, she won't go do that creative drawing or whatever. And so one thing that I've done is I said like, okay, one thing is I've been monitoring her screen time, and I've said like, you need to get under X amount of hours, you know, because I checked the phone, you know, after a while, and it was like 6 hours. Okay. But also you got to be careful, because if they're playing music, that's counted as screen as time on the phone. So on your phone, and I'm just talking about an iPhone, you get to say, all right, what apps are counted against you and what apps are ignored, you know, like Spotify, if they're listening to music, you could exclude that from, you know, whatever. But definitely having a limit on screen time. I tell them, you have to exercise.
You speak.
No, no, I was just listening to some.
All right. You know if there's any way to you.
One thing you want to do is say, okay, you can stay on your phone, but I want to see one creative piece from you. You know, so I'm using my daughter's example. I want to see something. What have you done today? What creative thing have you done? I want you to exercise. I don't care what you do. And when you start putting those rules on, and then you can play up, you know, you can work, play on your social media or whatever up to like 8 o'clock, and then it goes off. Yeah. And so I think introducing slowly things that they have to do to wean them off is easier than you saying, okay, you're only going to use it for 2 hours or 3 hours. I've also banned any phones on at meal times. They're not allowed to bring the phones out. I don't want to see phones. And that started with me because I always had my phone at the table. Yeah. And so now I don't bring my phone. I don't expect, I don't allow them to bring the phones. If we go out to dinner, they're not allowed to bring their phones with. I just raise it as a constant thing in their minds, how bad it is for them. Just me riffing here, but interested to hear from other guys as well.
Yeah. Just real quick, my daughter's only 4, but I can't control what she does in her mom's house. However, she knows it, and she every morning she wakes up and she says, no TV, no tablet, because I noticed that it slows her down in the morning. She doesn't pay attention to me. And there's other things that cause that too. But it's very, very clear that she is more attentive and more cooperative when she doesn't have that stuff. So when there's time constraints, like during the weekdays, I've said no TV, no tablet before we leave for school. And she doesn't care. And I let her watch TV or whatever when she's eating dinner at night at times. But I mean, I've noticed that personally. It's amazing how much it actually affects her attitude and her focus.
Wait till she's not 4 and she's 14. Just throwing that out there.
the big issue, I mean, apart from the addiction, the big issue is all the other kids are on social media, and that's how they communicate. Yeah. So the minute you limit her, you're actually limiting her access, or her, him, you're limiting their access to their friends, right? Which is quite tough. If all the friends are chatting and they get left out. Yeah. And so that's the other component that's been really difficult to manage, because then they get left out, and then they get labeled as, oh, you know, she's got the weird parents, that don't let them on, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then the kid gets the bully, you know, or gets whatever. For some part of it, that there's an educational piece there that, like, you know, hang on a second, we're not the same as everybody else. We do things differently, you know. So there is that piece that can come in at some point, but you also got to be careful about just coming down hard on that, and understanding that that's how kids communicate nowadays. You know, my son's playing games, right? When I used to play games back then, it was just me and the game. Now, my son is playing a game and he's talking to his friends. You know, he's got a Discord channel up here and they're having a conversation about this, whatever, and they're playing. This is how they're communicating. It's a sign of the times. It's not great. And we get to not fight the war, fight the best, right? And say, okay, you can do that, but first you've got to do the exercises. 2, you've got to do your chores. You know, 3, I want to see a creative piece out of you. And start training into them what we are doing for ourselves, the deep time, the exercise, right? Because the more they can do that, the more benefit they're going to see outside of their the social media, which for the most part is just dumb viewing. You know, it's like phasing out. Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like creative too, right? So they're working that creative muscle, and they're also like, I mean, my daughter, like, we avoided TikTok like the plague. And then I was like, fuck this, let's put parental stuff on there. And she's just like coming out of her shell, confidence, creation, you know, she had one thing go viral and like all of a sudden just her eyes light up, like that side of her spark. So there's a balance, right? But at the same time, I think it was either you, I'm putting you in good company here. It was either you or Joe Rogan that said, I'm going to give my kids as much technology as they can handle. And And so it's like, you know, look, like if you fuck up, cool, I'm gonna bring it back. But at the end of the day, like, this is a part of us now. You need to be healthy with it. And we're going to give it to you in a way. I'm going to give you as much as you can take. But if you go past that line, I'm going to pull it back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think kids need some boundaries. Yeah.
Yeah.
They certainly do. But I mean, like my daughter, right? She wanted to redo a room. So I said, listen, yeah, just let me know what you want to do and then we'll see. Yeah. Next minute, she downloads an app. She measures out a room. She designs the whole thing with all the like bits and pieces, the drawers, everything that what she wants, the colors, the decorations. She's priced it out at IKEA and she's come to me. This is what I want my room to look like. And she's got the whole design, you know, in the app. There's a room, right? And that's a price list. And I thought, oh shit, I'm screwed. I can't say we'll see. I can't say you whatever. She's got all the information. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, half of me like I got shit scared. The other half I was really impressed, you know. But yeah, it's to your point, Jared. You know, and she's really creative. You know, she takes great photos. If anybody in the family is going to take photos, she does it. She's 12. You know, she's 11. Actually, she's 11. She takes the pictures because she's figured out how to use all the functions of the phone. So, yeah, there's that as well. Benjamin, you had your hand up.
Yes. All right, so you can hear me. When I'm setting up my algorithms of consistent time of sleeping and waking, I'm having a challenge with the inconsistency of my load assignments. So sometimes I'm at the mercy of rush hour, or I'm all of a sudden having I'm getting better at my decompression time and going to sleep at a certain time and winding down and feeling great about that. But sometimes the expense is that I'm going to be up at 3:30 in the morning, and everything that you said, that first hour is so vitally important for the rest of my day. And I can be planning my day out, but there's a mental block I'm having. Well, if I've got to get up at 3:30 to beat Seattle rush hour, then when am I going to have my rise and shine? And then my day goes to shit. And so that's my challenge. And if there's anybody out there in the community that understands trucking and understands, like, I own my own truck, but I still am dispatched. And it's changing. It changes every week. And so I am challenged with my progress because I keep falling back. Even if I'm making significant agenda steps, it's like, God, does this mean I have to get up at 2:30? And that's my challenge. And I need help with that. And holding me accountable or just saying no to some things. It's been a real challenge and it's stunted my progress.
So Benjamin, you know, sometimes we just can't fight with what is, yeah? And if your schedule is out of your control as such, you have to then look to be a little bit flexible. And just do what you can on the days that you can, and then have a slim down program, alpha, rise, and shine for the days that you can't. Okay. And then just flow with what comes your way, because it sounds to me that unless you change your vocation, or push back, which might have a negative impact on your vocation,
right?
You have to suck at 3:30. But what you could do, is figure out what is your one, your most important keystone habit that leads you. It might be meditation. So even if you wake up at 3:30, you might want to wake up at 3:00, do your 20 minutes meditation, get on the road, you know. And so break down your alpha reset in, you know, what could I do in the on these days, and on the other days do the rest. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. One of the things I've been doing is it's almost a non-negotiable, because my trip takes me to the Columbia River, and it might be in the middle of the day. It might be at 5 p.m., but I make sure that I jump in that water and I do gratitude, or I do some exercise, or I do some meditation there. So it's almost like my flexibility is shifting my ARS to, it might be the middle of the day, but damn it, I will make it to that water.
Excellent. Yeah, exactly. You could spread out your off horizon shine throughout the day. Obviously, we want to do something in the morning. So whatever that is,
yeah.
And you know, incantation or just 30 minutes of journaling or whatever, or even breath work, 20 minutes of breath work in the morning, get your energy up, hit the road.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Gabe.
Okay.
Shit. Okay. Can you hear me? Yes. Okay. Yep. A couple of things. Benjamin, shoot me a note because you know that's I'm on the other side of that business. So we can brainstorm. So if you can hear
yes,
me.
Yes, you are. Thank you, Gabe. I can't believe I forgot that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're good. That's all right. I forget more than I remember, but you're good. Yeah, go ahead and shoot me a note. We can brainstorm. And then, Jared, that's a slippery slope with your daughter's thing. What stuck out to me in what you said, I love the idea of kids being able to create, but I would be cautious of those viral things becoming a sense or a source of validation. Does that make sense? He's not listening, but maybe Arthur is.
Validation, yeah. Jared?
He falls asleep. Jared. Chief.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
He's on his phone doing a TikTok.
Yeah. So I'm guessing he got onto his phone and that switched his earbuds off onto the app. And that's why he can't hear anything. All right. So yeah, Gabe. There's no right and wrong here. I know kids that you know, parents that have just taken electronics away completely. And there's parents that just don't give a shit. Well, I don't want to say they won't give a shit, but just like let the kids, you know, free abandon with the electronics. I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. Yeah. Give them some access. But make sure that they're looking after themselves. They're doing the chores to learn responsibility, doing some physical exercise, doing something creative, because then you start building these habits into them. And obviously, importantly, maybe not as important, but you've got to be clean with your technology because they're looking at you. Yeah. If they see you on your phone all day watching TikTok, you've got no fighting chance of convincing them otherwise.
Yeah. I agree with that.
All right, gentlemen. One more question and then I got to go. Otherwise, I'm going to get divorced. Anything else for anybody else?
Not that bad. Right, Ian?
All right, gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed the series. I hope you implement. I think there'll be some life-changing stuff in there for you if you do. If you've got any questions, any support needed, you know where to find me. Yeah, much love, guys. Thanks for joining me today.
Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Great.
Awesome. Bye-bye.